If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Whoa, it's the CU Podcast. Weather outside is great. The CU Podcast is so delightful. Since there's no place left to listen to anything, we're here with
wow,
the
CU
Podcast, CU Podcast, CU Podcast. I don't know where
poorly thought out.
Absolutely. Welcome to the CU Podcast. This might be the last new one of the year. Last fresh one for Tuesday, December 17th, 2019. Don't worry, we'll do some recap episodes maybe later on. Or best of. That's Ian Ferguson.
Howdy.
I'm Pat Contra. I'm feeling kind of like in my own head today. on the show, we'll be talking about Xbox Series X. Pokemon Company going after leakage. They're trying to stop leakage. Bootleg NES Classic console seized. The Pornhub year in review, Christmas memories perhaps, and a Patreon poll topic. To start, Ian, is your Christmas shopping all done?
No.
No, you got some people left to...
Yeah, I mean, I hate Christmas shopping. I don't want to talk about Christmas shopping. I don't want to talk about... No, I just... It's awful. I hate doing it.
Yeah, you go on a couple websites, click some buttons, it's good to go, Ian.
It's misery.
Well, I got Ian's present while we were preparing for the podcast. All of a sudden, what was your reaction? What did you say? You're just like, Ultimate Fishing Simulator.
Oh! So Steam Auto just starts up when I turn my computer on. And, yeah, I'm sitting here and we're getting ready and I'm overlooking things. And this window pops up with Ultimate Fishing Simulator. And I'm like, why is this popping up? We just talked about it. I was like, oh, Pat got me Ultimate Fishing Simulator. So I have two fishing games.
I got you two fishing games.
Two fishing games. I think the other one was like Fishing World Adventure. So I'm looking forward to actually playing those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One was a lot more than the other. They both got good reviews, it looks like.
Well, hopefully they'll be fun. The one is the one that we talked about last week, right? By the people who are doing the Jesus game.
Yes.
So
yes,
I'll have to check that out. And we'll see if we'll see if it bodes well for I Am Your Principal.
Yes. I think we have to keep it on the radar. See how put it through its paces, the fishing company.
Yeah.
And so mine is just about done. My shopping. I just got Vonnie something. You recommended something nice for Vonnie. Shh, don't tell Vonnie. And then I have to buy one more gift and I'm done. I'm at the point where it's just gift baskets.
Sure.
Not gift cards, gift baskets. Has at least a little bit of thought. Gift cards has almost none.
Well, and a gift basket is something that can be used like immediately.
Yeah, it's stuff you're never going to buy for yourself. It's always like those little fancy higher end like supermarket little places where you can buy wine and like crackers and little cheese spreads and the olive tapenade and things like that, whatever, that you'll never buy for yourself unless you're reminded it exists. It's just nice. You know, I got one of my friends like a little like Prosecco one. It's like a Prosecco and then like all the little things you eat, you know, while you're relaxing with your loved ones or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, so no, my shopping's just about done here though. And then, like I said before, for Christmas Eve, we're probably gonna have a best of CU Podcast.
Yeah,
we've never done one before in 6 years. There's enough for probably six. We're gonna tape some intros and rejoiners. I think the Cleveland Chameleon might be its own separate one, the whole saga.
Yeah, I think that's its own.
That'll be like volume two of the best of.
Right.
So record that, and then you'll get one there, and you might get another one before we come back to record another fresh one after maybe the first of the year. We'll see. We'll see what happens around the end of the year if we're around for that. We'll see. But definitely for Christmas Eve, I'm not going to be around for that. So Ian, Skywalker. Oh, real quick, Ian, you didn't notice someone behind you. You didn't notice. Look down. It's who clogged the toilet, Luigi.
Oh. Awful.
Move to your right a little bit so that people can see it real quick. It's Who Clogged Your Toilet, Luigi, paired with Where's My Keys, Mario.
Where's My Keys.
So we got both of them right there. He's got to get them up in the same level. I can't believe you didn't notice that sitting there.
Guys, please tell me. Where is my fucking keys?
Who clogged the toilet, Luigi? What's going on? I could have used that for the last marathon.
Yep.
I could have.
You could have.
In a big way. That's a story I'll tell 10 years from now.
That's a hell of a title.
Yes, that's a big tale.
Yep.
Yep. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. By the way, Ian, did your Steam come up again?
No, because I shut it down.
Okay. Well, Ian, because I'm so nice, mm-hmm. I got you a Steam gift card as well.
Oh, well, thank you.
So when I Am Your Principal comes out, you have to get it. That's the one condition.
Okay. All right.
So there you go. I wanted it all to happen at the same time, but, you know, the fishing thing got ruined. Okay, that's done.
I was still wonderfully surprised.
All right. Well, you're welcome.
I appreciate it.
You're a semi-decent friend sometimes.
I'm gonna play the hell out of some fishing.
You're going to play the hell? You're going to fish the hell out of some?
Fish the hell out of that water.
You're going to hook some virtual fish in the face and toss them back? All right. Ian, real quick, before we get to Star Wars, Demon's Tilt, the spiritual successor to the Devil's Crush, and I guess Alien Crush, but it's devilish. It's coming to Switch like next week.
Yeah,
out of nowhere.
I'm excited about it. So I've actually been following this game. I was actually playing it last night. I've been playing a bunch of games. I'll get into that in a second. But Demon's Tilt is fantastic. It is like you said, a spiritual successor to Devil's Crush. It even has the transforming face in the center.
Oh, it does.
Yep. It's like a nun face that transforms and gets progressively.
It says in the trailer, occult pinball action arrives.
Yep. It's three layers. It's so there's three floors. The bottom level, there's enemies you can destroy. I'm being very simplistic here. The middle layer is the transforming face, and the top layer is awesome. It's got this fucking lion face that's covered in armor with a snake arm. So I guess that would be what is that? It's not a griffin. A basilisk, maybe? I don't know. It's something. And,
okay.
And a shield, and you can destroy it, and it gets progressively crazier. And the pixel art is just nuts.
It looks like a jaguar when I'm looking at it.
The art in the game is insane.
Yeah. It even has the same font that the TurboGrafx games had, like the simplistic, you know, 80s.
It's got the eye. And there are a couple of different modes. There's the standard mode, and then there's the EX Plus mode that does have the mini game tables as well.
Okay.
So like you can unlock the mini games. The sound design is something I really, really like in the game. There's like a lady announcer that I really enjoy the sound of the voice, and the music is fantastic.
I love the copy of this press release. Turbocharged Pinball is back. And then it also says, what was the other thing? A mega-driven soundtrack. Wink. And then some of the
Because it's all done with FM synthesis, so it sounds, sure. It's exactly like a Sega Genesis soundtrack.
It includes stuff like the Manticore, Partline, Serpent and Scorpion, and then the Shub Calamari. I don't know what that is, but I want to battle the Shub Calamari. 120 million years old is just a baby when it comes to cosmic gods, so I guess they're Shub Calamari or gods in the game. All right, and there's a priestess, and there's like, you know, you got pentagrams coming at you can hit and things. It looks incredible. It looks incredible.
Yeah.
And that's coming to Switch. And you can use your flip grips that we finally got, or you had to reorder.
Yeah, we got them. even though I bought this on Steam, I will probably buy it again on...
Or you can return it for I Am Your Principal. You can return it on Steam.
No, I bought this game ages ago. This has been in early development for a while.
Can you return something on Steam still?
You can, but I mean...
Within time limit?
Yeah, there's a time limit. No, I got this probably 6 months ago in early access and was playing it. But I will probably get it again for Switch for the Tate mode, the flip grip.
You say tape? Tate mode or taint mode?
Tate.
Tate?
Tate. T-A-T-E.
That's a thing?
Yeah. Tate mode is what it's called for shooters. Like there's like a tape mode would mean like on a console shooter, you could set it for Tate mode and you could then...
Which just means vertical screen.
Yeah.
I never heard that expression in my life. Tate?
Tate. T-A-T-E.
Okay. Is that a spread as well with the Prosecco gift basket?
I don't know.
The Tate spread? And then what else is going on? Not for Resale is going to print on Blu-ray. So that'll be available for purchase in January. And then we're going to have it on Amazon as well for purchase. And then I'm trying to figure out a way to sell it digitally on my site as well. But that's going to be cool when that finally hits. And of course, you can get the certain Super Nintendo guidebook. And
it's Tate mode. I'm sorry, not Tate mode.
Tate. A hot Tate. You can go to ultimatenintendo.com. Get your post-Christmas shop again, because if you order it today, there's no guarantee you're going to get it by Christmas, unless you live like within probably a four-state radius from where the warehouse is, and the warehouse is in Michigan. So if you're in the Midwest, you might be able to get it. California, we'll see. We'll see about that. We'll see how quick that media mail gets there. It's usually a week for media mail. It's like 6 days or so, 5 to 7 days, depending on where you are. But all right, just order today when you hear this. That's all. And you might get it the day after Christmas. Anyway, so early Star Wars reviews are in for the rise of Skywalker. He's been rising for 9 movies now, a Skywalker of some shape or form. I guess he's been drifting down and rising back up. Our pal Andre Meadows went to the premiere last night, and then there's no Rotten Tomatoes reviews yet, but there's probably a boycott or not a boycott. There's an embargo until probably, like, I'm guessing like Wednesday when they come out. But the early word on Rise of Skywalker, I think, is overall positive from what I see it on Twitter.
Yeah.
Overall positive. But I also saw that, like, it's just a ton of plot versus characterization. It's just, like, a lot of action and just a lot of things going on that you got to keep track of. There's, like, a heavy exposition for the first, like, 45 minutes just to set up everything. And then one person said there's, like, enough plot for, like, 3 movies in this film. And I'm like, oh, I'm not shocked, because there's a lot of loose ends that they gotta tie up. The Knights of Ren allegedly are in this movie, and they were not in the second movie at all. So you gotta bring them back and put them in the plot and fight them. And there's a lot of stuff. The Emperor's back, and there wasn't a shred of evidence that the Emperor was gonna be in any of these movies until now.
Right.
So, I mean, like, there's a lot going on here in this strange, strange, bizarre trilogy this is gonna go down as, I think, in the annals of film history here. And then who knows, they're probably gonna have Luke come back as a Force spirit and talk about shit. Who knows if he's gonna help fight the Emperor. I'm excited just because, like, I'm hopefully gonna go in spoiler free. I want to see what happens here, but I think I'm not gonna be overjoyed at the end of this. I just think I won't be overjoyed. I'll be like, it was a thing that happened. This is the same way at the end of Revenge of the Sith. I'm like, it's a thing. It was like homework at that point. It was like an assignment I had to complete. Right?
Sure. I can't get excited. It wasn't like The Last Jedi destroyed it for me. I gotta be honest with you, Force Awakens left me without a whole lot to get excited about.
Sure.
I mean, as much as I enjoyed watching it in the theater, you know, as a popcorn flick, you know, and it's not like this hasn't been said a billion times, but the fact that it basically rehashed the beats of the first movie so point for point was like, I don't know, it didn't leave me excited. And then I didn't think The Last Jedi was an awful movie, but it didn't set me up for anything else particularly exciting either. So now it's a third movie, and, you know, this is supposed to be a big finale of what? If the first two movies in a trilogy don't get me excited, I can't possibly be that excited for the finale.
It was speculated, I mean, not that I'm a genius, but this is a course correction to The Last Jedi, this movie, and that's what people are tweeting. Like, one person said, who is this? This is an actual, was this a real a movie person here? Some of the New York Times says, Rise of Skywalker could only have been ruder to Rian Johnson if they had motion smoothed it. I'm not sure what the motion smooth is a reference to. I'm trying to think about that, but J.J. Abrams has come out and said, as politely as he could, that there's things that he disagreed with in The Last Jedi, that he would have gone in a different direction. It's the nicest possible way he could say. So at the end of the day, you're going to get two movies that are actually not even that much connected, because you have a gap between them and a standalone middle that might have, looks like, almost nothing to do with the two films around it.
That's how I feel about it. I think that's my take on the trilogy. I don't think any of the films are going to feel like they're linked together.
And that's not the director's fault. That's not Rian Johnson's fault. You can give as much shit you want. That's Kathleen Kennedy's fault running the studio.
Sure.
And not putting together a solid vision and sticking to it, like Kevin Feige has for all the Marvel movies. This is a multi-billion-dollar property, and it's still unfathomable that you can say, all right, well, JJ did some setup, but we don't even have a full story arc that's really on paper, so Rian Johnson, you do whatever the hell you want for the second movie. Consequences be damned. I just can't believe that happened. And this is the same company that does the MCU. I just can't believe that. And I know some behind the scenes. I won't say anything that, you know, but that's what it comes down to. So That's why I'm really interested to see how this ends up, because if they're trying to shove in three films worth of plot into one movie, wow, this is going to be a big bag of just shit going on. It's going to be like the Fast and the Furious of the Star Wars movies, where it's just like 2 minutes of plot and then like 20 minutes of action and 2 minutes of plot and exposition, and then, you know what I mean, just like tons of things going on to rush through this. So we'll see. And plus, there's new characters that they're introducing in this one as well. And plus, Lando comes back in this one. So it's like fan service, tons of story, lots of action, Emperor comes back. There's rumors of other weird shit going on that people were surprised about, that this is going to be, I think this is going to be so divisive. Like, Last Jedi was divisive. I think it's also going to be divisive because this is the last movie to end this saga. Where people are going to say, oh, you tied up well, or this was just a fucking mess. That's just a feeling I have.
I don't think there's any possible way you can tie it all up. I don't even know that I'm going to go to see this in theaters. I didn't see The Last Jedi in theaters either. At this point, I may just wait for it to come out. And I mean, I'll look, if everyone, you know, if reviews come out and it's extremely positive somehow across the board, then I might try to go see it. But I still haven't even seen Knives Out, and that was the movie I
wanted
to
see. Speaking of Rian Johnson, yeah, it looks good.
That was the movie I wanted to see this holiday.
This one tweet says the positives were epic, nonstop action, which is weird for a Star Wars movie because you need those quiet times to develop the characters. There's no Star Wars movie with nonstop action at all. It's usually like 20 minutes in between action scenes at least.
Sure.
Lots of fan service. See, I don't like fan service at all. I don't.
Fans are they servicing is my question.
Original trilogy, I guess.
Okay.
So I'm guessing, like, there's no reason to bring Lando back when he's, like, 80 years old. You know, and I don't think they would have brought Lando back unless, like, whatever. I just don't. I almost didn't want to see Han Solo again just to kill him off. And Han Solo is the best part of episode 7 to me, just because he was, like, in the plot for most of it.
Yeah.
And I think that was that was probably the only way Harrison Ford wanted to come back to do the movie, kill me off, because he wanted to be killed off in Return of the Jedi, famously, because he saw no place for his character to go, and he was correct. And with this one, I was like, oh, I was just an asshole father in the Force Awakens. So it says immensely satisfying, very emotional. And then the mixed reviews is that it's a bit convoluted, big changes in direction from episode 8. We're not surprised about that. And then someone said, one article is already saying, Rise of Skywalker reactions say sequel feels like an apology for The Last Jedi. You can't do this with your trilogy. You just, like, you can't have it where, oh, we fucked up. Sorry. Now we're going to do the real movie we wanted to do.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Then it tarnishes both movies when you do that. Like, it's hard to go back and fix it. Anyway.
Yeah, you can't course correct in the third movie of a trilogy. Because then you end up feeling like that's what I'm saying. Then you end up feeling like you don't have a trilogy. Three separate movies.
You have three, or two movies that are semi connected, with a big gap in between. You know, that's all. This is a funny tweet. The Rise of Skywalker. Baby Yoda has been found dead in Miami. Is the first line. Someone just did a fake thing. That's funny. I just think that's funny here. So, all right. That's all I got to say. Maybe I'll do a short video, Ian. I never do like movie reactions, or rarely do. Maybe I'll just do a short one on Friday. This comes out, what, Thursday night it comes out?
Yeah.
Or Friday. And I'll just say, I'll do like a 10-minute video. I just think what this comes down to is I'm exhausted by Star Wars. We have a topic coming up later about toxic fandom, which isn't all about Star Wars, but it's, you know, it's tangentially related. I just think as I get older, I just have less of a hold on these things that I liked when I was like 5 and 6 and 7 years old. It's slipping away, I guess, at this point, the more I see it commercialized. Not that the original ones weren't commercialized.
I was going to say, they were plenty fucking commercialized.
But now it's such a product where it's a steady... Star Wars used to be, we had three movies come out, and two of them came out before I was born, or one barely born, and then you had nothing. You had nothing at all for like 10 years, besides a few comics and novels.
Right.
And now it's your guaranteed a Star Wars product every month of the year, just about, with the shows, with the cartoons coming back. You know what I mean? Now it's always around. It's not special anymore. Maybe that's what it's not as special anymore.
Sure.
When I say that's what I mean about saying it's commercial. It's a steady product stream now. That's what I'll say. And it wasn't before.
Well, I also think this is how we've went from I think that's why we have all of these Star Wars fans now, wondering, you know, when they're going to get their Star Wars back. And there's a lot of revisionism lately where people are like, oh, well, the prequels are fine. No,
they're not.
No, they're not.
They're horrible.
They're not.
And that was the beginning of the end.
And I'm gentler on the prequels than most people because I like the concept of the of the political stuff. But I
was not executed well.
No, but I like the idea of it. But no, they were bad movies. They were fucking awful movies. And I will say that about
bad action, bad CG, bad dialogue.
Revenge
almost,
of the Sith
almost
was
no
bad
characterization.
Too.
Almost no characterization for characters like Padme. Qui-Gon has no character at all.
Yeah.
In that movie, and then Jar Jar is fucking horrendous. I don't know how we just gloss over that. Oh, those were no. Jar Jar was one of the worst characters ever put on film.
And there was, it was just, you had the Star Wars that existed when you became a fan, and then Star Wars became something different entirely.
With Phantom Menace.
With Phantom Menace. Yeah. And that's when it became, I mean, obviously the first ones were commercial, but that's when it became a product entity.
A product pusher.
Yeah.
More than the original.
More than anything. Yeah. And I see these people who are angry about all this Star Wars stuff, and it's just, I've said it before, but maybe take two steps back and realize that if you haven't liked 2/3 of it, that you aren't, you can still like the movies, but you don't have to call yourself a Star Wars fan. You don't have to be part of the fandom. You're allowed to pick and choose. And I don't know. It's weird to see people constantly going back to it, expecting it to change into something that I don't even know you can define at this point.
It's almost like a way how this, I wasn't around for it, but originally, when the Next Generation came out, Star Trek Next Generation, people from the original Star Trek, those fans were pissed off.
Sure.
I'm not sure it's the same extent. There's no social media back in, what was the Next Generation? 90, it was 90 or 89?
89.
No, 87 or 88.
88 or 89. It was 88, I think.
It was around there. They were pissed off because they were still making movies with the original cast, which were still popular, still making money. They're like, how dare you do this to us? But you know what happened? Next Generation was brilliant. You needed to have a different cast and different style for that. And with Star Trek, it's allowed to change. It was because they did 4 or 5 series where each one was radically different. Deep Space Nine was great.
It's totally different.
And totally different in tone from Next Generation. Then you had Voyager. Some people like Voyager. Some people don't. The whole point is that it changed every like 6 years or so, with 7 years with some crossover in between. Star Wars hasn't been like that. Star Wars has been, this is Star Wars for 15, 20 years, original trilogy. Now we have Phantom Menace for 5 years. Then we have nothing for 15 years again until these new movies. So you have these generational shifts, and along the way you have people that grew up with these specific set of 3 movies saying, this is my Star Wars.
Right.
And nothing else around it. Now, it's Star Wars is almost like Star Trek now, because now you have all these TV shows and you have movies at the same time, and you have these varying things of what Star Wars is on the screen, at least. You always had different types of comic books, but no one really read those Dark Horse comics. They weren't that popular in the early 90s. And then the video games were just for video game fans. That was a niche thing on the PC. But now it's like Star Wars is whatever you want it to be, and some people don't like that.
Sure.
That's what it's become. And I'd say it's lost its luster as a magical, property, because it was so special that we didn't get a movie for like 15 years until The Phantom Menace. And then at the end of Phantom Menace, I sat there literally theater empty that Saturday afternoon. I was just like, all right, great. I think that's what I said to myself after watching The Phantom Menace. And then I sold all my toys I was collecting, like, within a couple years. I was done. I was even done before Attack of the Clones. And Attack of the Clones was actually a worse movie than Phantom Menace.
Oh, agreed.
That was horrific. From the romantic subplot alone. I remember being in the theater, and I was in college then. That was my senior year, 2002. And then people next to me were like, shh. I was at the screen yelling, like, after, like, it's coarse, like, I was like, I actually said, come on, in the theater. And the friends asked me, like, shh, like they're watching fucking Shakespeare. And then when Yoda started flipping around, I just rolled my eyes. I said, that's not Yoda. I don't know what I'm watching anymore. I don't know what I'm watching. And they were like, oh my God, it was awesome seeing Yoda flip around. And that's when I knew, I'm not a Star Wars fan anymore. I'm a fan of 3 movies that came out mostly before I was born. That's when I kind of realized it at the time, Ian.
Sure.
I like some things about Star Wars, but I am not a Star Wars fan, if that makes sense.
Yes.
That's what I've converted into slowly but surely.
And that's what I've always been.
And that's when I sold off all my Star Wars toys. I think that's what I realized. I was like, yeah, I'm not a fan anymore. I'm just like, I like some of these movies.
If people ask me, hey, do you like Star Wars? I'll be like, yeah, I like Star Wars.
I don't need to have the Boba Fett Return of the Jedi figure on my shelf anymore. I don't need that. You know. But then it became video games. And the psychoses transferred over into collecting. That's almost kind of what happened. It went from collecting Star Wars toys and some comic books into toys and collecting video games. That's what happened. But hey, I made a career out of it. So there you go. All right, so go see The Rise of Skywalker. Just have a dumb, fun time. See how they made a zombie emperor. You know, he's the best. He was the best part of the original. Excuse me, the prequel trilogy was Palpatine by far. The only person that might have had a semi character arc in the whole freaking trilogy.
Yeah, honestly, when you think about it.
Anyway, all right, Ian, we're gonna start this main topic with the Game Awards.
I mean, I'm not really talking about the Game Awards, but I am going to talk about one, probably the big announcement from the Game Awards was they finally did the reveal of the Xbox Series X.
Xbox Series X.
And
okay.
We'll get a little bit more into that in a second. So Microsoft announces the new Xbox. And they did give some of the components under the hood. So there's going to be an eight core targeting around 3.5 gigahertz, custom processor, 12 teraflops, 13 gigabytes for RAM, or 3 gigabytes of RAM for games, 13 gigabytes of RAM for games, 3 gigabytes for the operating system, and the storage is going to be solid state.
And a custom GPU. Built on the AMD RDNA architecture, which I have no idea what that means. The biggest thing, obviously, solid state, we talked about before, that means you're going to load up games quicker. Games will be smaller because you can access information quicker. You don't have to repeat information on the hard drive. That's cool stuff. And then, obviously, you're going to have the ray tracing, I guess, going on. I mean, when I look at all these specs, I'm like, okay, computer specs, that's fantastic. You know, you can get a 3.5 gigahertz chip on a computer nowadays, but we're going to put it in our console. That's cool.
Microsoft
teraflops.
Microsoft announced that thousands of your favorite games across four generations of gaming will be available on the Series X. I doubt it will be 100% backwards compatible, but Microsoft has been good about working on making backwards compatibility a focus, which I love. That's great.
Well, I mean that every Xbox original game I'll be able to put in, I'll be able to play. We'll see.
Yeah.
That's great, though.
You can't do that on the Xbox One. And even like 3-4 years ago when I was playing more games, if the backwards compatibility wasn't close to 100%, I sometimes didn't see the point because I would still want... If I'm going to have that old system hooked up for games anyways, my thinking is, well, I'm just going to play them on the old system. But... I don't know. I play less now, and just having the ability and the accessibility, what Microsoft does with their backwards compatibility is a really nice selling point, and it ensures that people who buy these systems day one have something to do. They can play their old games on it, see if there's a graphic boost or whatever. You know, it does tidy things up a little bit, and especially in the living room. So I really do applaud Microsoft for always being kind of, you know, always pushing the backwards compatibility and kind of making sure it's there. And they're still doing that here. It's so with how this is being released, though, I have a feeling that we're going to see... I don't know if it'll be yearly, but I have a feeling we're going to see probably more versions of the Xbox Series X.
Every 2 years,
X.
I'll say.
Every two. That's what I was thinking.
The same way it's been with the Xbox One, just about.
The Xbox...
the S and One X, yeah.
Yeah, the Xbox One had the One, the S, and the X. The S was less of a... It was smaller and quieter. There was, I believe it added HDR support.
Yes, that was a big thing with
so
that.
So they did add something.
Yes.
I think we will probably start seeing... I think Microsoft is really very much going to start treating this like a home gaming computer. I have a feeling that, yes, every 2 years. And I as much as I hate this name, and I'm going to get to that in a second, I think they're setting themselves up to be in a position where the big console reveal isn't really something you do. I have a feeling it's going to be... For Microsoft, at least, I have a feeling it's going to be incremental updates. I don't know that we're going to see another...
This is the I think we just said, like, this is the last. This is it. Like, you're not going to have these big divisions anymore. It's over on these consoles. It's going to be like incremental updates going forward. And
yeah.
That's it.
Like
computers.
And
it's going to be probably where, all right, I have to say I bought a piece of software in 2020. That might work for like 7-8 years on these different iterations. It'll just be weaker and weaker, just like a computer. You can still play games that are new on a crappy computer, but it'll be like less frames. It'll look, yeah. You know, the settings will be lower, but you can still play it. I can see the same exact thing happening.
It's
here.
It's an interesting idea. I think if they, I think it's a fine line for them to balance though, because if it goes to computer, then people are going to go computer.
To me, it's just like, okay. You know, an Android phone versus an iPhone. An iPhone has a glossy interface. You don't have to worry about anything. So people like the iPhone,
sure,
versus the Android. That's the same thing to me. It's like, yeah, you can play it on a PC, but then you got to worry about everything else on a PC and malware and antivirus, or versus having a dedicated computer,
yes,
console for your TV.
I'm just saying,
it's just simplistic.
What remains to be seen is how compatibility will be, how well games later on will work on earlier systems.
Sure.
All I'm saying is it's a fine line, because if you get to the point again where people are like, well, will this run on my X, Y, or Z?
You're right. What's the point?
What's the point? And then I feel like that would end up giving the edge to, you know, back to Sony or Nintendo. Well, we don't exactly know what Sony's going to do, but it could give the edge back to Sony or Nintendo, or, again, a company that's okay with things looking outdated for a few years as long as everything plays on it and everything works fine. But I'm not anti this. I'm very curious.
You're worried about confusion of the software once you have three different versions of the console.
Right, exactly. And we don't know what's going to happen.
Well, with the One X, with the Xbox One, you can still play on all three, correct?
Yes, exactly.
So I don't see why there'd be any big difference with it.
Well, that's the whole point of what I'm saying, is I think they're looking to change sort of how they
market it,
how they do this.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see.
We don't know if it's going to be upgradable. Maybe you can swap in a new GPU. I mean, if you look at it, it's a mini tower, shape. I actually love how it looks.
People have been making fun of it. I like how it looks.
It's a game rectangle. It's how a mini tower looks.
It's a game rectangle?
It's not a GameCube. It's a game rectangle. It's not a cube because one side's longer than the other. Not a rectangle. What is it? It's a trapezoid. Whatever the fuck it is.
So, yeah, I actually think it looks kind
of
nice.
I don't think... What do you want a game console... Is the look of the game console that important anymore? Like, I guess if you want it as an ornament by your TV or by your sound system, like, it looks fine. It looks like a subwoofer. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it does. It looks like a...
And you have the ventilation on the top, which is smart.
A black monolithic
heat rises,
box.
Right?
I don't like how the drive is on the side. Drives on the side for optical media is almost always a bad idea.
Unless it's one of those ones you just push it and not have a tray.
Oh, it doesn't matter if it's a tray or not. It's still... Well, you're right. It always seems to scratch up discs.
Because remember they had those CD-ROMs where you just pushed them in?
Yeah.
And versus the Anyway, I'm not concerned about that. Controller, it's an Xbox controller. I mean, like, at this point, what are you going to do with an Xbox controller? It's an Xbox controller.
I usually end up with Sony consoles, usually based on exclusivity. Like, the PS4 got me with its fighting game exclusivity and stuff. But I will say, I like the Microsoft controller far better than I like the Sony controller in terms of how it holds. This is going back to a circular D-pad, though, and I fucking hate circular D-pads.
Well, it's like an indented circle around. Didn't they just have the...
They're dog shit.
Wasn't the Xbox controller a regular cross pad, finally?
The Xbox One?
With a dial that you can make it a regular D-pad?
The Xbox 360 had a flippy-do version that was great. Because the 360 the 360 D-pad is, like, my least favorite D-pad.
It's awful.
It's
like a television disc. It's like a disc.
It's miserable.
I remember when I had the 360 and I did play, like, the Street Fighter on there. I could not do a Hadouken to save my life.
It was a mushy piece of shit.
Yes.
But, yeah, it looked a lot better on the... on the Xbox One X.
Yeah, they had a real D-pad.
And now it's back to this circle. And I'm like, no.
Nintendo's D-pad patent's gone. That's been gone for a while.
Yeah.
I think you're allowed to use whatever the hell you want now for a D-pad.
Yeah.
You don't try to get around it like what they did with the Genesis and TurboGrafx. Like, you're allowed to do it. And so I don't see why you would ever think that'd be advantageous. Unless it's something interesting. It's like indented coming out, which is interesting. It's like coming. Maybe they figured out something here.
However, I am going to lean into the fucking naming.
Okay, Ian.
There was a new article that came out. A new article came out yesterday morning. The next generation Xbox has a much simpler name than you might think. It's actually just Xbox.
That's from Business Insider. Yeah, that's not an easier name.
That's not easier.
That's a brand name. It's not an easier name.
So we have the... This drives me nuts. And this is kind of what I was saying earlier with the... I think the reason behind it is, going forward, Xbox is going to be a name that they try to use, like, computer. This is a computer game. This is an Xbox game. They want it to be sort of a catch-all term, and that's why I think it's going to be, we're going to see more incremental upgrades. You're going to get the Xbox, you know, G, the, I don't know. But,
well, they're starting on X. There's not a lot of letters you can go from there.
Yeah.
X1, X2, X3, and it becomes a movie franchise.
This is awful for retailers, and I don't know why they think that this is cute or funny, or even it's not stylistically awesome. It just sucks. This is going to create a lot of fucking trouble for retailers, for parents, for people who are just getting into games, especially places like Luna, where we do, you know,
two locations,
Chula Vista, La Mesa, where we do, you know, older hardware generations. I want an Xbox. Well, what the fuck?
Because now you have five to choose from.
I don't think Sony's naming conventions are attractive. I mean, PS1, 2, 3, 4, it's boring, but it's fucking clear.
Yeah.
It's clear. I do still get people every once in a while who come in and they're like, can I get a PlayStation? And I'm like, which one? They're like, oh, the 4 or the 5. But when it's the Xbox, right now it's already hard enough. Can I get an Xbox? An Xbox One. I go and I get an Xbox One. No, the original Xbox.
Well, now it's like, I want a Ford. Well, what type of Ford do you want? What type of car? That's what they're changing it to. That's
yes.
What Xbox is coming, the car model.
The
car name, car brand, and the model will be Series X, Series A, Series...
Right. And I don't think that's a good... like
it's not good for the market, the marketplace.
No, it's not.
It's hard to market.
And going back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, I enjoy their controller. I enjoy what they do with their backwards compatibility. I like the fact that they share between, like, they do cross-play. I don't have any problem with the system. In fact, I'm really waiting to look and see what Sony does before I make a decision. Like, I could go back to Xbox next generation, but really, it'll be like, if fighting games are still exclusive to the PlayStation, then I'll probably stick to Sony. But I could be convinced. I'm not, like, a brand loyalist when it comes to it. I could be convinced to go to Microsoft. But I think in the long run, the naming is going to be problematic, especially if they do incremental upgrades instead of big system releases and things get confusing. It could become very confusing for the consumer. And then, like I said earlier, people are going to go back to the console system that is easy instead of having to look up, you know, what if you know, 3 years from launch, there's already, you know, two more models on there and there's huge differences between them.
Different colors.
Yeah, I think it does run the risk of being overly complex.
I'm trying to think, I guess if they come out like Series A, would it be a different color? Would it be a different shape? Because that could be confusing as well, you know, at that point. Would it be like emblazoned Series X? You know what I mean? Like, how many different shapes are you going to have to differentiate these? If they're basically computers and you're admitting that. You know, you can't go back to like the next one looking like, you know, like an Xbox 360 if this one looks like a mini tower or a tower. Like, it does bring up some issues. I just like the fact that, you know, they have the integration of the software being playing on Windows 10 as well as the consoles. If they continue that to me is a competitive advantage versus Sony.
Yes, it is.
A big one to me.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And plus they have they all have their gaming services, but, you know,
I mean, on top of that, I want to throw
Game Pass.
Yeah, Game Pass is a fantastic, it's a fantastic freaking deal. So Microsoft has a lot going for them, I think, in terms of software this time around. I think they can.
Now you can get that show. MLB The Show is going to be on all the consoles in a couple
of
years.
That game is so good.
See?
But I feel like the hardware thing could leave people confused and. I don't know. Maybe this is all just a big...
Versus just saying like how PS4, it's like PS4 Pro. They're not fucking around with different series models.
Right. Yeah. You know? I'm afraid that this is a sign that Microsoft is going to further confuse what is already starting to become a confusing console landscape.
Well, like I said, it's a computer. We knew that. These have been computers for 10 years, these consoles. They're not game consoles anymore. I mean, so... All right, this is coming out holiday season, and you're going to have the PS5 as well. And what do you think it's going to cost, like $500? Was that what the Xbox One cost when it came out originally, something like that? So it's not going to be cheap.
PS4s and Xbox Ones, I think, were $400 when they came out.
You sure about that? For the lower-end, smaller hard drive?
I'm pretty sure they were.
The Elite One went for $499 August 2015. for the original Xbox One, according to this.
Well, it came out in 2013, so...
Okay.
Yeah, the Elite one was...
it was $400, launched in 2014.
Because after the PS3 launched at $600, and everyone was like, that's crazy. So there was a big push to have everything launch at $400 for the new generation.
So the first model was $400 in 2014, and then the Elite...
The Elite was just a system that came with
hybrid solid-state hard drive. Okay.
It also had a ridiculously expensive controller with it.
So they had a semi-upgrade a year after the original release.
The Elite was it was a bundle that came with a extremely expensive controller. The system itself wasn't upgraded. It was the controller.
This article said it had a hybrid solid-state hard drive.
They might have put a different that I don't recall. I thought it was literally the controller. But then the S was the big.
Sure. But slim. We'll just say then they had three or four different models in 5 years, though.
Three. Yeah. Three truly.
If you don't
count
the Elite. Okay. That's every other year.
Yeah.
So this is going to continue. You're going to have till the end of time. You're going to have, even when you're still working at Luna Video Games for 20 years, you're going to have 15 different versions of the Xbox for sale.
It's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough before you move to Florida and retire. It's going to be tough. Okay. Maybe I'll get Reb one of these next year. Instead of, to do my gaming on. Kind of ray tracing. I have a 4K TV, though. I'll probably have to get one to take full advantage of it. There.
So,
anything else to add? We good on this?
Moving on.
We're moving on with this. All right.
We're moving on.
By the way, they told the Business Insider the name we're carrying forward to the next generation is simply Xbox.
Great. You've been carrying that name.
The name Xbox Series X allows room for additional consoles in the future. So that's their strategy. They're a car company selling.
But my thing is then call it the Xbox Series. But that's what it's already been. I fucking hate it. It's awful.
They are calling it Series X.
So, moving on.
Pokemon.
Pokemon Company is going after leakers, but not people who have leaked the game. People who leaked images on Discord and what was the other company? Discord and 4chan and Reddit. There was 18 images that were leaked from the strategy guide a few weeks early.
Okay.
Made their way around to various, I believe, news sites and things like that. And the Pokemon Company is really unhappy about it. So they've gotten permission to go forward, and they're going to be issuing subpoenas against Discord, 4chan that would force them to come forward with
IP addresses of individuals.
Yeah, of IP of individuals.
So this is serious. This isn't just a scare tactic.
Right. The leak began this is from the IGN article. The leaks began a couple of weeks prior to Pokemon Sword and Shield's release, with images circulating around the internet showcasing unreleased images of Pokemon, including new Gigantamax forms taken directly from the official strategy guide. The Pokemon Company's lawyers claim that the leaks had caused irreparable injury to Pokemon and that the company is entitled to damages in an amount to be proven at trial. So... let me say this. I understand that companies have to protect their IP. I understand that they have to go after things like this. But I'm rolling my eyes here at the images leaked from the strategy guide have done irreparable harm to the company. I don't buy it. The Pokemon Company are seeking financial reimbursements from the individuals responsible for all losses caused by their wrongful conduct. And then there was another line from them that I'm trying to find. I think it's up here. It also mentions that the leaks are responsible for reducing the fan interest and engagement the Pokemon Company and its partners generate by keeping key elements of the game secret.
I didn't see any of these images. Was there anything key and secret that was leaked in these?
I mean, the idea of certain Gigantamax forms and things like that, but no,
what's a Gigantamax form?
So there's giant versions of Pokemon in the game, and
super giant version,
and then the Gigantamax ones are like, so if you're playing if you're playing a battle where you can Dynamax your Pokemon, which is to make them big, certain Pokemon have Gigantamax forms, which changes how they look. So, like, you know, like, you can get a Snorlax that goes really big. That's the big fat cat. Or you can get a Gigantamax Snorlax, which when it goes really big, it's sleeping and there's a tree growing out of it. Like, it's just neat little weird forms and evolutions and things like that.
Tree grows out of a sleeping cat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't know what else to say other than...
This happened on November 1st. Defendants allegedly posted stolen trade secrets from the strategy guide. This is in some insider people, obviously, getting... some shots of this. Well, here's the thing. Did these people sign an NDA? If they find out these people that they're revealed to him were employees of some sort and signed an NDA, they're screwed because signed an NDA.
Sure. No, yeah. I absolutely get what why I get. I understand why they're doing it. I understand protecting your property. I get it. I just think the fucking wording is dumb. I don't think it did irreparable harm and damage. I don't think these pictures leaking. Sure.
You didn't turn off people to buy this
thing.
You
didn't stop 500 people from buying it. You didn't stop 1,000 people from buying it. I get it. It's just the fucking wording is... I hate the wording.
They're going to settle with these people. They're going to make an example out of them. There's going to be some say 5,000 each or whatever. They're not going to end these people's lives. They're going to make an example of them so in the future it doesn't happen. That's why you do these NDAs. It has to be someone who signed an NDA. Like, who would have got this information before three weeks before it launched? Who would have had it?
Yeah, who would have had the strategy?
It would even be, would they be at Amazon and someone opened one up and snapped it? I mean, I don't think so. I think they probably have a good idea who might have done this, and they're trying. That's why they're treating the IP address.
They said they do. They said while they haven't named them yet, there are four people in particular that they're looking at.
Okay.
So,
you're going to get slapped by Papa Pokemon, and well, Nintendo's sort of like the big ball. You know, Nintendo's the muscle here. They're not the ones probably pushing this as much as the Pokemon companies. They have a minority stake, but they're the ones. Okay, we got to go along with it too and slap you around with their lawyers, you know. So, the strategy guide was released a week after the game came out. Okay, is that usually what happens with the strategy guides?
No, usually they come out at the same time.
That's interesting. The Pokemon Company details some of the security measures it uses to keep its information safe. Employees undergo background checks, stores files on secure computers, restricts access to those files, and traces and marks files. Anyone with access to the game or information on it is required to sign a non-disclosure agreement, including any contractors and production vendors. They're making an example here. These are people that most likely signed a contract, an NDA. They're not fucking around.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and you got to enforce it.
Only production facility employees with proper security clearance have access to the strategy guide during the production process. So this is like in a safe room almost where they allow people in here.
Yeah, and I feel like figuring out who it is probably going to be like shooting fish in a barrel.
Those with permission to access the secured areas are not permitted to bring in cellular phones or cameras. Wow, okay. They're serious about this. They're not screwing around. Something in that process apparently broke down ahead of the strategy guide's release. Pokemon Company said it reacted swiftly to the leaks after the images were posted online and issued takedown requests in an effort to mitigate the damage. Okay. So this... All right. They're seeking compensatory damages for the leaker's wrongful conduct as well as monetary relief. Punitive and expiatory... God, I can't ever say that. Exemplary damages and injunctive relief. It's going to be hard to prove how much money you lost from these leaks. That's what a jury would be like. How much money do these leaks cost you? And if they can't prove it, that'd be up to a jury. But obviously, these people don't have the money that Pokemon does to sue them. So they're probably going to be forced to
settle
for something and say, yeah, I was wrong. Here's some money that's going to hurt me, but don't put me out. Versus going through a trial that could take a year.
Yeah.
It sucks. It is what it is. I guess don't leak the strategy. I mean,
yeah. Comes down to it, you weren't supposed to do something, you broke the rules, and now you're being punished. I just think
it's shitty. I know, it's a shitty situation.
Yeah.
Ian, imagine a holiday season where you get to escape the long lines, crowded parking lots, and pushy salespeople. Here, try this perfume. Sounds pretty nice, right? Well, that's exactly how every day can be with Mint Mobile this year. Skip the lines, skip the hassle, skip the malls with Mint Mobile, the online wireless provider that delivers unbelievable savings directly to you. For a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering the best deal in wireless. Save up to 40% off their 3-month phone plans starting at $15 a month. Whoa! For that $15 a month, you get 12 gigabytes of 4G LTE data plus unlimited nationwide talk and text. Again, that's 40% off the standard rate. Use your own phone with Mint Mobile. It has to be your own phone that's owned by you. It's unlocked and it's a GSM phone. And you keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. In the mail, they'll send you a little SIM card pack. You just put it in your phone. They even give you the tool to open and get the little SIM card out. And then you get the app and you're up and running. You tell them your old phone number or you get a new one and you're going. It's simple. I've done it. And they use the T-Mobile infrastructure. So it's a real network here that you can trust. And if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee. All right, take advantage of this Mint Mobile deal before it's gone to get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month. Get the plan shipped to your door for free. Go to mintmobile.com/CU podcast. That's mintmobile.com/CU podcast. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month. Save hundreds a year with Mint Mobile. Ian.
Yes.
This was like almost a throwback topic to me here. This came from WBTV Channel 3 on your side out of North Carolina. Raleigh, North Carolina, home of a ex-YouTuber Roo. Hundreds of fake Nintendo Classic systems were seized by North Carolina's anti-counterfeiting task force at a Triangle area shopping center recently, the Secretary of State's office said. Okay, the task force worked for the last 2 weeks to obtain the counterfeit systems from sellers, and the sellers voluntarily surrendered them. A total of 340 fake Nintendo Entertainment System Classic Edition systems were surrendered amid the operation. This is so weird to me, just because this harkens back to this happened in the mid-2000s with the, you know, those Famicom clone with like N64 controllers were always sold in malls.
Yeah, the Super Joy Boys or whatever the hell they were called.
Yeah, they were all over the place. They're over the flea markets at the time too.
We got one in at Luna once that was called the Italian Brothers Game Console.
Okay, I want that
Italian
one.
Italian Boys Game Console.
I want that one. but back then, Nintendo went after those people eventually, and they had a ton, I think, confiscated in New York City, somewhere around 2005 or 2006. There's stories about that, and it's happening again with the NES Classic Edition. I mean, when you go to the swap meet, there was a vendor. I'm not narking. I'm not dropping a dime, but there was a vendor I've seen with just dedicated to selling. It could have been this exact one, 620 games.
Sure,
there's probably like the main one out there you can purchase here. So the real Nintendo systems have 30 pre-installed games, while the counterfeit system claims have 620 and even up to 800 pre-installed games. Yeah, they're just loading up the system with a bunch of them. They're basically hacked systems. And these usually have the crappier AV to HDMI output. It's not a clean HDMI output.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've seen people bring these in before and try to sell them at Luna. And I'm like, I can't take this in. I'm sorry.
I think they're just careful not to put the Nintendo logo on the front of them or whatever the actual system, but it's the same shell.
It's a printed case. Well, maybe not 3D printed, but it's a Nintendo manufactured case. It's two knockoff controllers. They load, I've seen them with up to 800 games.
Uh-huh.
I always feel like the people who are selling these things at malls, because when
they gotta know they're counterfeit,
but I feel like that's a huge risk to do that.
Yes.
Especially in these day and age, like this day and age, you know, you're mentioning malls, you know, grow in the like late 2000s, early 2000s, you'd see these all the time, little mall kiosks, and they would just have tons of these plug-in
consoles. The little wooden fucking carts they had.
And you'd have one person standing out there. And I always wondered how they were able to sell there, but...
because they went under the radar.
They went, yeah, exactly.
15 years ago. It was harder to report them.
Now,
plus back then, retro games wasn't a thing. It was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, people saw it and probably didn't... I mean, the first thing people saw, they thought that wasn't...
15 years. Yeah.
Yeah, they probably didn't think, oh, this has got to be a bootleg. No, they were just like, oh, Mario Brothers. But I think, now people know more about it. They're more savvy about it. They understand these laws. And I can't imagine a place trying to do this, a person trying to do this in a mall in this day and age, being successful with it.
I don't know. I guess they probably figure there's this anti-counterfeit task force that's going after, not just this, obviously, they're going after probably counterfeit Gucci bags and things like that.
Right.
And they must know this is fake. But I wonder if they get pressure from someone like Nintendo. I don't think Nintendo would probably care about this that much. I don't know. I'm speaking out of turn. What's weird, though, here is that the estimated retail value was $800,000, only 340 systems. Pat math doesn't work out with that. 800,000 divided by 340 means each one of those would be retailing for for $2,352. It doesn't make any sense to me. Did I do that pat math right? These don't retail for more than like... NES Classic was 60, right? These, you can't get more than like $40 for these pieces of crap knockoffs, can you? You know?
The estimated retail value of the goods.
Yeah. That doesn't make any sense. The retail value should be 60 times 340. It should be $20,000.
Yeah.
For these. Unless there was like 3,000 that were... 340.
The only thing I can think of is maybe they're trying to look at like the worth of the games and then extrapolate it from there.
There you go, Ian. That makes sense. Well, if there's 300, was someone at the task force saying, "Oh, what's a Contra worth right now? What's a Hudson's Adventure Island?" That'd be funny if that was my assignment on the.
Let's just say that they're going by like basic digital game prices. That makes 5 times 320. What's that? Do the math.
Oh, these have 620.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Maybe they're saying that they're a dollar each, 620 times 340. That still gets only 210,000. They probably did something like that, though. You're right.
They pull the magic value out of the air.
The value, like $3 each for these games. So they're probably thinking, like, well, the value is like $1,000 or $1,800 each. That's what they did, I think. They said these are $3 each. That means each one's $1,860 times 340. No, that still gets you only $632,000. We'll figure this out. But that's what they probably did. You're right. They probably said these games are worth like between $4 and $5 each. This is like a square one segment now that we're doing.
How many consoles were seized?
340. Square one. Do some division, Ian. Just divide from 800,000 divided.
Well, at $5 per game... the systems then become worth $1,054,000. So
it's somewhere
$4.23.
It's something in there, Ian math. It's in there somewhere.
Yeah,
I just think it's hysterical to see this happen.
I mean, whatever.
How embarrassed would you be if you're a real retailer? This can't be real retailers that would stock these. This isn't a toy shop that would they would know.
Yeah, no, I have to imagine this is a person who had a bunch of these drop shipped to their house, went to the mall, said, "I'm going to buy that kiosk for 2 months
and sell a bunch.
And ran a gamble.
And so they probably won't get sued by one directly civilly, but they're just recovering them. You know, less than 10 decides to go after them. Okay, I think it's not as heartwarming as the interview ticket scalper from like four or five years ago.
Yeah, that was great.
That's going to be one of the best stuff. We're going to throw that in. All right, moving on. Ian?
Yes.
You know, Christmas time is important for many reasons.
Yeah.
You get to buy gifts like Ultimate Fishing Simulator for your friend.
Indeed.
You buy the peanut butter cup trees for the stocking stuffers.
Yep.
It's time to relax and slow down. It's also time for the Pornhub year in review.
Oh, I see.
And we've done this at least once or twice before. We may have done it last year. So this is Pornhub's 7th annual year in review, where they bring the hottest trends, term searches, and recap everything that happened this year. And I didn't know they have a Pornhub Insights blog. I had no idea. So Pornhub is one of the biggest, you know, websites out there for all your one-stop porn shopping needs. And they released quantitative analysis of search terms, videos uploaded. And, you know, hopefully this video doesn't get demonetized, but we'll just go over the numbers here. I think it's fascinating. There were 42 billion visits to Pornhub in 2019. 42 billion!
39 billion searches performed, 115 million visits per day, 6.83 million videos uploaded. Jesus. 1.36 million hours of new content. That's 169 years of content to watch.
They said if you went back to like the 1850s and started watching, you wouldn't... You'd still be watching them today. Of just the 1 year of content.
Yep.
Oh, you started watching 2019 videos in 1850. Wow, Abe Lincoln had a lot of watching to do on his iPad in the White House.
6,597 petabytes of
data. Petabytes. I'm not sure what that is. I guess 1,000 terabytes?
I don't know. That's 18,073 terabytes a day.
Wow.
753,000 gigabytes per hour. 209 gigabytes a second. That's the one that I need.
I wonder if that's more than even YouTube. I wonder if that's more than YouTube.
I don't know. It would be interesting to compare this to YouTube stats.
If you copied all that data onto hard drives, they would reach 100 kilometers high to the edge of space. Oh, my God. 11.5 million video comments, 98,000 plus new Amateur models. Oh, ghost phone.
Ghost phone.
All right.
What was I going to say? There was something I was going to say here. Oh, 42 billion visits to Pornhub, 39 billion searches performed. That means...
You're doing a lot of searching.
Well, that means that a lot of people found stuff just fine on the front page. They loaded up, well, and they're like, all right, well, that's good enough.
Not a lot. That's a low percentage.
Well,
that's 3 out of 42.
I'm surprised that there'd be... That it wouldn't be like 41 billion searches performed per visit.
Hey, well, maybe something catches your eye. It's like, what's hot? Ooh, what's going on here?
Well, you know, today I'm going to do a little window shopping.
And then they had the were fapping part of this article about what was going on while you were fapping about messages being sent and new uploads happening per second, things like that. Here we go. Top searches. This is the best thing. The top searches that define 2019. I am surprised by about 5 of these. Number 1 is amateur. That's not shocking. There's a little cute little GoPro image that they put here. Number 2, Ian, is alien.
Yeah.
Now, this is... I remember the last time I talked about this. I think it was like Amazon or giant women was a big search term. Whenever this is... I got to search this now. I got to go on. We got to search this. I have no idea what genre this is. This was not something that I am aware of. But when I search it, there's a bunch of alien monsters, some CG stuff going on, alien prostitutes. It's some weird stuff here that I have no idea what's happening. I guess it's a thing now. And they did a whole insight about alien porn. insight into it. Number 3 is point of view. I guess that's with and without virtual reality. Number 4 is... Belle Delphine, remember she did the gaming girl bathwater thing, and she blew up because I think it was because she did a viral video on Pornhub, and that's a lot of people watched.
She
that.
Did a
like a fake out.
She did a fake out. Yeah, it was watch me stroke two big cocks or something, and it was her petting roosters.
Good for her.
Yep,
she's hustling. Number 5 is cosplay. Okay, numbers. That's probably always gonna be popular with what movies coming out and things like that. Number 6 is mature.
Mature.
Number 7 is bisexual. Number 8 is Apex Legends. I guess the characters...
video game stuff is different. I mean
last time we did this, it was probably...
Fortnite was last year, I think.
Was it? And the year before was probably... the
Overwatch.
Overwatch.
I think Overwatch was a big one.
Number 9 is ASMR. That's a strange one to be combined with... pornography. So it's like, you're whispering like this. I guess that turned some people on. They're quite. And number 10 is good old femdom, like good old Alicia Dragoon video.
There it is.
That's anyway. It's always interesting. Mature. I just love how studious these articles are. Really analyzing this. Mature searches also define 2019 with the rise of GILF porn in categories. People are now free to indulge in their age to perfection fantasies. It's written very well these year in reviews from Pornhub. Okay, ASMR. Let's see. I'm trying to see what it's such a controversial fetish that some people don't even believe it exists. I guess okay. I did not know about this. They talked to Dr. Lori. People are searching for out of the box porn with searches like cosplay and ASMR. The interest in cosplay indicates the desire for all kinds of fantasy play. It's just about the sex. The costumes play a big role in stimulating the brain, taking people out of the ordinary. It's the same for ASMR, which is all about the sensorial experience. People want to be transported to another state of mind, not just by images, but also sounds. Okay. All right. ASMR. There you go. All right.
Fucking weird alien stuff, man.
And then I guess the most searched for term in 2019 was actually Japanese. That was fourth last year, and it went up to number 1 with a bullet. MILF was number 1, and now it's number 4. That came down. Hentai stayed at number 2.
Hentai at number 2 is always interesting to me because it's one of those things where, like, lots of people won't admit to liking it, or they're like, oh, that's weird. But then you look at something like search terms, and the search terms don't lie. A lot of people are searching hentai. Fucking tons of people are looking for it.
So that was let's see, what's the biggest change here? Public went up by 8, and then BBC went up. By 11. I don't think that's the British Broadcasting Company there. I think there might be something else there. So, then at the bottom of the list, Squirt.
Big, beautiful cookies.
The bottom of the list, Squirt, maintained its, like, number 25 at the bottom. It looks like. It's consistent, I guess. And then the most searched for a porn star, someone I didn't know about, I might do some research. Lana Rhodes was the most searched for a porn star there. Interesting. Okay.
All right.
All right. Interesting enough. And then the number one most searched for porn star was Jordi El Nino Polla. Okay. All right. There you go. It's just funny. And then, of course, yes, we're number one. We're the top Pornhub country again. By a huge degree. I understand our population's big.
Right.
We're knocking out of the park. But Japan's coming in strong at number two. We're coming in strong there. They moved up from number four spot. And the UK moved down a spot from number two to three there. They're the only ones that went down. India's fallen off the map. It must be an Indian Pornhub. They went down 12 slots there. So they used to be like number two, it looks like. And
maybe there's a home,
India hub porn.
A homegrown alternative.
And Sweden's almost coming off the list entirely. Sweden, you got to do better. They went down the list. All right, it's a fun topic. I think it's fun. I'm one of those people that think porn can be healthy. It's not a dirty, you know, it's you know, thing that, oh, you're going to go to hell or whatever.
No, it's not.
Everything in moderation. That's all. Just like margaritas and video games and Star Wars here. All right, moving on.
Margaritas.
All right, Ian, you want to do some quick Christmas memories? We're probably going to do on the best of. We'll probably do something.
I don't know what to talk about in terms of Christmas memories. I mean, I feel like we've done this every year, and I don't know.
Did we do this last year?
I don't know. Maybe we did.
I think we did. Done a specific disappointing Christmas gifts. We did. I think we did that last year.
Oh,
as our topic. I feel we should do like a Christmas topic, even if it's like Christmas food or something. Christmas food memories, is that enough to get enough mileage out of it?
I'm doing Christmas food I'm doing Christmas food in 2 hours and 20 minutes with the other podcast. But for Christmas food, yeah, I mean, I can talk about it. I mean, for me, I always, Christmas to me, I don't really think about an actual meal per se, but I do remember all of my, all the cookies my Grandma Ferguson used to make. She was not a cook. She didn't particularly like cooking. She didn't do a lot of cooking. But every year she would spend like a freaking week doing Christmas cookies. And she would have multiple varieties. We're talking she would make like anywhere from, you know, 6 to 10 different types of cookies.
6 to 10?
Oh, yeah.
My mom does 4. I think that's a lot.
Yeah, I think that's 4. A lot, too.
Yeah.
My sister-in-law just sent Vonnie and I some cookies, and she did 4 different varieties. And I was like, it's a lot of work to be doing all that.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you're doing it by yourself. And my grandma would always do them for, you know, every member of the family would get a box. So there'd be like my mom and my dad, my brother and I would get them. And then I had cousins.
It's a full day of baking. Yeah.
For her, it was definitely, you know, the thing. But yeah, like otherwise, like with food, I don't think of necessarily a ton. You know, Christmas party, I go out and I get a good meal, and then
you had a nice steak dinner. I heard
I did. That was
let's talk about the steak dinner.
So every I can talk about the fucking so the Luna Christmas parties. It's funny. They used to be notoriously crazy. I came home from one without my shoes once. Yep, lost my shoes. Just fucking lost my shoes. I've lost my shoes twice in my life.
What do you kick them over the bar? Just relax.
I don't know. that's good. It's part of the problem. Yeah, there was a Luna Christmas party where we ended up on the beach drunk, firing Roman candles at each other. That was a fun year.
Someone had Roman candles.
Yeah. That was good. Watching the sunrise as you fire Roman candles at each other after a night of heavy drinking. But the past few years, the Luna Christmas parties have gotten far tamer. I'm getting far more tame in my old age. Trigg's got kids. And honestly, I think Trigg's the one that would probably party more than anyone. But our other coworkers, you know, aren't as crazy as our old coworkers were. So anyways, we went to this place called Born and Raised. It's a steakhouse in Little Italy, I think, is where it is in San Diego. And I'm a person who doesn't... I'm not like a big steakhouse person. I don't go for steaks all the time. I don't dislike steak, but there's
I don't either.
There's just a billion different things that I mean, like I like to cook and mix with ingredients and stuff. And with a steak, generally, if a steak is good enough, it's to the point where you're not supposed to really be putting anything on it. Sauce. I just don't like. I don't get any joy from cooking.
You cooking can rub red some meat. Seasoning on it, but
yeah.
Or maybe you cook it like in some butter or something. Yeah.
But we went and I got a dry aged. On the bone New York strip steak, and it was a fucking revelation. It was so good. And I always say, I have a lot of good meals. I have a lot of great meals every year. I like to cook. There's a lot of good restaurants. Vonnie's a good cook, but I haven't had a meal that really kind of
shook me or
woke me up to, you know, something in a long time. I'd never had a dry aged steak like that before, and it was wild. So, yeah.
Did you have any sides with it or no?
I did whipped potatoes. I did mushrooms fricassee. We all split a bunch of sides.
And that
was something that I'm gonna actually be trying to make. Is the mushrooms fricassee was really good.
What the hell's fricassee?
Well, I don't know what if it, I'm
Are
assuming
you pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah, it's fricassee. It's
a wine sauce?
No, it was. So they were like sauteed mushrooms. I'm sure there was a sauce of some sort, but the big serving thing was it came with a whole egg yolk on top, and the egg yolk was stirred in before you eat it. And it was freaking delicious. I love mushrooms.
It was fricassee and delicious.
It was fricassee and delicious.
I'll look up the right now about what the hell is in here.
Yeah, I'm looking right. Fricassee.
So there's like an egg base to it, egg yolk base to the mushrooms.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay. There's champagne vinegar, there's shallot, there's thyme, there's pepper. Okay, it sounds interesting. I don't think I've ever had it in my life.
Yeah, it's fucking
so
delicious.
So you had a real steak, where a steakhouse where you can buy just steak.
Yeah, and it was just, oh God, it was
okay, nice. I might have to do it sometime. I've never done that. I never went to a high-end steakhouse in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I spent my life not thinking I ever needed to, but that's the thing, as great as it was, and as much as it really changed my perception of some food, it's not something I think I'll be running to go do again anytime
yeah,
soon.
Yeah, there's some people that are steak people. There's some people that's what they love eating, which sure. That's their thing. It's not mine. All right, so my Christmas food, you know, I saw so bad before. It's the Feast of the Seven Fish.
Oh, yeah.
It's the highlight of my, it's what my year revolves around is Christmassy when you're Italian. So you start with the antipasta, you know, you get your mushroom salad. You got your plate of you get your capicola, your prosciutto. We get the fresh bread. Sometimes you can buy the half baked bread, so you finish baking it yourself in the oven. Oh my God, mud on! You bring it out, you put it out, you can get a little dip it in the olive oil. Some people don't like the butter. Say it's anti-Italian. I like butter in my bread. Sorry, I do. Me and my sister always did. And my grandfather.
Yeah, I do too.
My grandfather Solly would yell at me, "Why are you dealing with the butter?" He was being nice though, but you know.
Yeah. But it's delicious.
Yeah, it's delicious. A nice fresh bread. So you get that. You have the bacala salad, the mushroom salad. You know, as a tradition, my grandfather loved with the meal to have scallions or green onions. And so I have to have green onions with it. I'm the one person that might eat them, but that's my tradition. I'm going to carry forward for my grandfather. He liked just chewing on it during antipasta. So
the green onions.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. I love green onions.
It's like a palate cleansing type of thing, kind of, as well. You know, you have all the cheeses, you have the sharp provolone, the fresh mozzarella, you got that going on there. That's a meal in of itself. I'm stuffed after that. Like, the amount of food I used to eat has gone down precipitously as I've gotten older. But I'd say, like, in my early to mid-20s, even when I was not, I wasn't, like, that overweight, but, like, I could pound two full plates full of like antipasta. Like, I could just pound it. And that's like that's like a pound of cheese in and of itself, not counting like the salami and things like that are out there rolled up ready for you to engorge on. And like having probably like eight slices of freaking bread. Yeah, I'm not even exaggerating. Like, you have to like scoop up the mushroom salad has like the oils and everything. You scoop it up. It's like I'm salivating onto myself now. And that's like step one. That's like an hour of just that. Mm-hmm. Then you rest for like 20 minutes, and then you get a bunch of fish. And this is where it could change up. You usually have some sort of linguine with clam sauce. You'll get like some fried fishes. You'll get some shrimps there. Some could be fried shrimp or some sort of like grilled shrimp thing. Octopus, Well, you'd have like little rings, calamari, things like that, where it's a variety of fish. You got to count to seven and get there somehow. You might cheat and include anchovies in, right. in the antipasta.
Sure.
But that's what you did. There's always usually linguine and clam sauce that's thrown in there. That's like two courses there, too. And then by then, you're like suffering. You're like, okay, no mas. But then, no, because now we got dessert. That's nothing. Now we got the Italian pastries coming out. You got the cookies coming out, the Italian cookies. The cookies my mom would always make. My mom would always make like the peanut butter with the half-dipped chocolate. I think I've given you some before.
Yeah, those are good.
The green Christmas tree cookies that have the cream cheese in them, they're delicious. I love the chocolate with the powdered sugar on the top.
Yes.
Those are like incredible. But then that's the, all right, cannolis. You got your schriadel. I'm not saying it correctly because it's like a schriadel, whatever. You got your butterflies, which don't exist anymore. No one makes them. They're like the little Italian little cupcake sort of thing. Napoleons, which is like my favorite Italian pastry. Struffoli, which I always order from back east because no one makes it in San Diego County, which are honey balls. I ever give you some to try?
No.
I never gave you some. This year I will. I feel bad. I ordered every year from Circo's Deli, Italian Bakery in New York. In New Jersey, you can get it. You can't get it in San Diego. One time someone tried making it here, especially for Frank, and they were awful. They were like puff balls. No. And my grandma used to make them. And it takes like 4 hours to make Struffoli. You got to chop up the dough and you got to deep fry it. The honey and the circular sprinkled colored things. They're like jimmies, I guess.
Not that's what they're called. Or whatever.
Whatever they're called. Yeah. And then you put like nuts in it and you put cherries in there. Oh my God. It's the best thing ever. So this meal lasts, Ian, about 6 hours. This meal, all in all, because with breaks, you start eating at like, okay, maybe like 5 hours. You start at like 7 with the antipasta. You end at like 11:30 midnight. You got to rush the midnight mass as a kid. You get there. And then in New Jersey, it was always.
Struffoli looks fantastic.
Struffoli is the best. I never gave you some really, even last year. Yeah. I must have offered it to you.
Mm-mm.
I'm okay.
It's fine.
I'm a horrible friend.
It's not a big deal.
All right, this year you're
gonna
delicious,
get some. Though, yeah.
Yeah. It was usually like right before dessert. Back in Jersey, it still goes on. The local firehouse will come around with the lights going, and then Santa's on the fire engine. And if you're a kid, you could stop. He would like stop and say hi for like a second and go around.
I remember that in Buffalo.
They did that too.
Yeah,
that was a thing.
Big thing. Yeah, Santa on a fire truck, and they'd run him around the.
Is that an East Coast thing? Maybe.
Maybe
it doesn't happen around here.
No, it doesn't. Yeah,
because now people would be scared. Yeah, they go around the neighborhood with that, and So that was like, I guess my food memories is that, and that's continued forward. And I would say that will be my tradition. That's like the biggest Italian or Italian-American tradition I'll probably hold, even if I have a family, is I'll try to at least do that, is have the Christmas Eve meal. Because that's like the biggest connection, I guess, to even Italy with the fish and everything.
Sure, yeah.
Is that. And it's important. And of course, the Italian pastries, which are incredible. And it's good
they're out of control.
It's good that you can't eat them all year round because I'd have a heart attack by now.
Yes.
I mean, you can't go to some, you get mini cannolis here and there, but you don't get the full array unless you go down to Little Italy. But there's still only three Italian bakers, I think, in all of San Diego County. There's not a huge amount of them. You know, it's a tough gig. There's not a huge amount of Italians here in San Diego. And then, of course, on Christmas Day is when you have your traditional ginzon food. You have, like, your stuffed shells, and you have your meatballs and sausage. And
delicious.
That would usually happen on Christmas Day. And that was a day we usually traveled to see, like, relatives. Like for Christmas Eve, it'd be, like, my dad and his brother and the cousin. I only have one cousin on my dad's side, and like those grandparents. And the next day would be when you visit the other side. You'd go around. You know, that's how it worked. You had to like go visit here and there. So that's when that's the most nostalgic I get for family is around Christmas Eve. Not even the presents don't even matter. Like that's to me, like I don't need anything. It's really just the food and being around.
I just like getting yeah. I just like being around because I get along well with my family. So Christmas to me was always let's eat and let's hang out. That was kind of my thing.
Yeah. So there you go. That's my Christmas memories about, you know, what was your food? Did you have Christmas Day or Christmas Eve food?
No, like I was saying, well, we always did like a big brunch.
You did a brunch on Christmas?
Yeah. That's what my mom would do.
Oh, it wasn't open because we'd get the Pantone bread. That yellow egg bread?
Yeah.
Is that Pantone? What is it called?
Pantone.
Yeah, that was your breakfast. You'd have like, you know, like a better version of, I guess, like a fruitcake, but it's a bread.
Yeah, I've been. You can buy it. You can go up to grocery outlet.
You can still buy it, right?
Yeah, you can go up to a grocery outlet and they have a big display of it for the holidays.
Panettone bread.
Yep.
Yep. It's just like a. like the most unhealthy bread, like sugary and just good and sweet. There's a sweetness to it. What do they put in that? Italian type of sweet bread loaf, originally from Milan. Okay. Candied fruits and raisins. Yeah, it's delicious. It's a dessert. And that's what we'd have for like breakfast.
I gotta stop looking at Strifoli recipes.
Uh-oh. You want to try it? It's tough, but you can do it. You need a deep fryer, though.
Yeah.
I guess you can do it in a...
I've got a cast iron pan.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll fund you, and I'll put the funds in to do it. You may not get it the first time. It's tough. Takes a couple hours to do it.
Yeah, it looks like it takes a while.
Wow.
All right.
All right. We're going to move on.
And we have a...
Do we have any... No Christmas tales from the game store?
No.
We'll get on the best of.
We have a Patreon topic.
We do have a Patreon topic.
We have a Patreon. You go to patreon.com/CU podcast and you check us out. I do.
you check us out.
I do a writing about once a week. I do a hangout. It was a good hangout this month. Video hangout with people. What did I say? I just said the writing. I said the hangout. We put the full podcast up. We do things. You know, it's easier than listening to me tell you about what we do on the Patreon. Go into patreon.com/CU podcast.
Wow, Ian, there you go. You saved it at the end.
All right.
All right. So our Patreon poll of the week, we have in third place at 18%. What licensed property would you want adapted to a pinball machine that's dying a death? Second place, 29%. The state of amiibo collecting 5 years in. And first place with the bullet, why have fandoms become so toxic in recent memory, Ian?
So I think one of the main reasons is the social media and the internet are great for a lot of reasons, of course, connecting people. But you get a bunch of people together. You give people who enjoy, you know, a certain show, like, say, Star Wars or wrestling or something like that, you give people places where they can easily get in touch with a bunch of other people who love that thing. But everyone's loving it for... It used to be you'd see someone and be like, oh, yeah, I like that as well, and that was enough. But when you're on top of each other constantly discussing and dissecting... it's easy, I think, for rifts to form in fandoms. Also with social media, they have access, people who make the media that people consume, whether it be actors or directors or writers, are more available than they've ever been.
Sure.
Before.
On Instagram, on Twitter mainly. Yeah.
Yes. And, I think over time, because social media has kind of been, a democratizing force? It gives you access to people that used to seem...
And amplifies your own voice.
And amplifies your own voice, exactly. And then people who create will respond to the people who consume, and you start to get this, I don't know, this feeling that if you don't like something, you can complain enough and it will change, not realizing that not everyone may like, you know, something in the same way that you do.
Sure. To me,
basically everyone's got a soapbox now.
Yes, and it's like wavelength amplification. One voice saying something, you don't hear it, but if 1,000 people say the same exact thing, it becomes louder. And that's what happens. That's what social media is. It's like, yeah, it's not important. You know, maybe, I don't know, this character gets killed off in this movie or doesn't go. In the past, it'd be like, oh, yeah, that sucks. Okay. If it was like the 90s or 2000s. Now it's like, well, I'm saying it, and 800 random people are saying it. It must be a big deal. In the grand scheme of things, it's not a big deal.
Right.
It just looks like it is because of social media, and that goes for everything, though, with social media. I'm one of the people that is now more and more, it's like social media, to me, there's a lot of good it's doing, and it's hard to get away with things that you shouldn't get away with social media. Information gets out there, but it's also easy to do shitty things or... make small things into bigger, larger issues that it really shouldn't be, at least in my opinion. That's what social media does as well. So it's, you know, it live by the sword, die by the sword.
And I think because it's also more visible, there's more focus on fan communities and things like that. I think that also, and people love it when I use this word, but I do think there is a lot of growing entitlement in fan communities coming from people who think that they now own the thing that they consume.
This is why I always wanted this information. And 22% About, this is from 2019 in April, about 22% of Americans use Twitter. This is, okay, so it's still not many people. Instagram's probably about that for younger people. They use Instagram more than we do. Roughly 10% of those users are responsible for 80% of tweets. Okay?
Right.
So doing a pat math, that means 2% of Americans, 10% of 22, are responsible for 80% of tweets. Yeah. What does that tell you? It means that the vast majority of people using social media are just consuming it. They're just reading it, seeing what's going on. But you have a very small minority of Americans, 2% of Americans, that are on there and just doing a lot of content, but they might be the ones that are also yelling a lot about things as well. So always keep that in mind with Twitter or social media. Always keep that in mind. It does not reflect necessarily what's going on in the minds of most people. It's what's going on that platform.
Right. Yeah, it may not be, I guess in the end then, it's not necessarily representative of fandom as a whole. Sure. But I think, you know, with social media breaking down the barriers and stuff like that, I think, yeah, there's this expectation, like I said, with the focus of on, you know, fan conventions and fans and stuff like that, it starts to feel like, I think there is a small chunk of fandoms that do feel like they own what they consume and should then have creative control and direction over it. And that's why they get so angry when the things that they constantly spend time talking about don't come to fruition.
Or don't.
I could have done it better.
Or don't come quickly enough, or not on their own schedule, or things get pushed back. And it wasn't like that until the past probably 5-6 years with social media. Because before that, it was like, oh, a trailer for a movie comes out. Maybe you go on a forum, like Dark Horizons forum or Ain't It Cool News, and you see people talk about it. And it was toxic in there, too.
Yeah.
But the thing is that you had to go to a specific forum or site about that topic to talk about it. Like, there's always been Star Wars forums or always been forums probably about, you know, I used to go on a Watchmen movie forum back before the movie came out. So we can bitch and moan about Watchmen. There's people for and against the movie. I was against how the movie was when it came out, for example. But it was self-contained there.
Right.
Now with social media, you can't contain conversations anymore.
No.
You see them trending. Someone could at you for something if you're an actor about a movie you started a year ago and they don't like it. And it's like, so now it's the best way I think I described to someone about Twitter is it's not like a discussion in the park. It's like walking through a hallway with all the doors open and people are yelling. While you're walking, you can hear them all yelling at you while you try to walk through.
Sure.
Yes, you can try to shut it out, but you're still going to hear about it or see it at least. And like, oh, wow. Ah.
Yeah.
Ah. And you can't avoid it. You got to be walking in that hallway. It's not like someone, a crazy person in the park with a bullhorn, because you can just walk away from that person. You can't walk away from it on some of the social media. You can't.
Yeah, unless you just leave the social media.
Unless you shut it off. You can always do that, of course, if it bothers you. But I think it's what you said is key, though, is about ownership. Is that before, when you were a fan of something, you're a consumer, you either liked it or didn't, but then you voted with your wallet, and then, okay, I like this, I didn't like this, I saw the movie, did. Now, it's not enough not to like something. Everyone else has to know you don't like it and why you don't like it specifically.
Right.
And before, that wasn't really a thing. You know, before it was like, oh, I bought a crappy Nintendo game. Okay, it was a crappy Nintendo game. I'm not going to buy their game from that company. I'm not going to, you know, go near them anymore. Now it's like, well, let's yell at the company for making that game.
Right, and that's what I was trying to say poorly about the social media breaking these barriers down. There's an easy, direct way now.
There's no
to...
The civil barriers are gone.
Right, exactly.
Basically.
Correct.
It makes it easier for... You're not accountable for being an asshole anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That, right? That's about it. You can be an asshole. You can't be an asshole to someone's face. You might be accountable, but you can be an asshole online. You can say shit you would never say in person to someone. That happens all the time.
Yep. Yeah. Being behind the computer makes everyone feel safer.
Yeah, you're anonymous, most likely.
Whereas, you know, back in the day, if you were part of like a fan club, you know, sure, there were BBS ones, but you had to go out and meet these people.
Or people at least knew who you are. You were accountable.
Right.
Even on a forum. If you're an asshole on a forum, eventually you might be like, okay, well, we don't want you in the conversation.
Right.
You're out of the thread, or we're going to ban you from here. Like, you're toxic. It's kind of hard to do that when social media exists, where it's not directed at one specific subject. It's everything.
Right.
You know, there's no moderation really on Twitter or on Instagram. That's what it comes down to.
Right. There's a terms of service, but that's far different than
Yeah, there's no moderator saying, okay, keep it along, keep it civil.
Right.
You know, maybe we need that. But then it becomes, you're censoring that. Can't do that. Okay. Moving on here. Or is that it?
That's it. You and I gotta, we gotta do some recording for this best of.
127?
That's about right. We got a little longer in the past couple.
We did 145, I think, a couple weeks ago. Last week.
Usually
it was
we've been about. I was gonna say we've been about an hour and a half.
How do we used to do 2-hour, 45-minute podcasts?
I don't know.
Every other week.
I have no idea.
That was manic Pat energy and manic Ian energy.
It was tiring.
We did 25 topic podcasts before. I mean, each topic was like a minute or two, but we did them.
Yeah,
that was like the height of the podcast. Because we're just doing like 2 videos a day. That's what the algorithm liked. That's what helped grow the podcast back in like 2000, whatever that was, 14, 15, about there. We're washed up now, though. Now, Pat's washed up. All right. That's it for this podcast. So, yeah. Like the podcast and subscribe, please, on your podcast platform of choice. Podbean, Google Play. I almost said Twitcher. Switcher? What is Twitcher. It?
Stitcher.
iTunes, whatever. Leave a comment how much you love me and Ian. And yeah, check out our nice sponsor, Mint Mobile, mintmobile.com/podcast. It makes a great gift for if you have a little teenager getting on the cell phone. It's a cheap way to do it there. My friend AJ is doing it with his 2 daughters. You know, if I had a kid, I would do it too. I'll get it for Who Clawed the Toilet Luigi there. And yeah, and then we will not be back for Christmas Eve podcast, but we'll see about the end of the year. I don't know if we're going to do them before the end of the year or after the end of the year. We'll see what happens there. We'll see where I'm at, where in the world I am at that point.
Where in the world is Patrick Cumming?
Watching Ian play Ultimate Fishing Simulator.
That's right.
At Christmas.
That's right.
All right, that's Ian Ferguson.
That's me.
I'm Pat Country. Have a merry, merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Be safe. Try to take a step back and be like, all right, life isn't that horrible. I can listen to a nice podcast every week, you know. I can go see a Star Wars movie and yell about it. That's not a bad problem to have.
No.
Not a bad problem to have at all. Your tummy's full. You got a roof over your head. It's not bad. Life isn't that bad, right? No. What are you looking up, Ian? More Stroopley recipes?
I'm pulling up the best of
life. Okay. That's it, guys. Stay safe. Thanks so much. We'll see you potentially in 2020, but we'll have a best of for you. Okay, take care.